Rita, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
Tell me about your decision to come to the United States to pursue higher education.
Well, in a former life, if I may call it that, I was a student at Bugama University, and I was in the journalism program. And at that time, most of the universities in Uganda did not have journalism programs. So the only way we thought that I could study journalism is if, you know, I went abroad. So before I went abroad, I decided to work at a radio station for two radio stations, actually, for 2 years. And after I got my experience and I knew that that was what I wanted to do, I applied for a visa and came to the United States to become a student, you know, to study journalism and speech and English.
And this was to get your master's degree, correct?
No, that was the bachelor's degree for starters, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So your bachelor's is in?
I was an English major.
English?
Yes.
And then your master's at New Mexico State University will be in communication?
Communication studies, yes.
All right. Interesting. Now, before this, I know you worked with computers, the IT field. Tell me about the decision to switch from IT to communication.
I realized as I was working those long hours, the tediousness of, you know, testing software and applications. On the side, I used to do voiceovers for the applications, for the company's applications, and I realized that there was still a fire burning in my belly. While working those long hours, I realized that I could only work that long if I was passionate about what I did. And I was passionate about the voiceovers that I did at the company, and I was passionate about presenting the test cases and writing the test cases. The other technical side was somewhat lukewarm.
We never want that, do we?
No.
You mentioned you worked in radio in your home country, Uganda. Tell me about that.
I actually fell into it. I never really went into it deliberately, but I'd taken a break from studying at the university, and it was about an 8-month break, and I was bored. And one day the phone rang. Apparently the caller on the other line had misdialed, and being a pompous man, he mentioned that he was the manager of a newly opened up FM station called Sanyu, and I sarcastically said, well, if you're the manager, I need a job because I'm bored. And he said, you know what? Come in for a voice test. And I went in, and before long, I was on a roll. I did 1 month of voiceovers for advertisements, and then I became the newscaster, and since then.
It's been what you wanted to do.
Yes.
You've now had some experience at KRWG working in radio here. How does it compare to working in radio in Uganda?
Well, KRWG is a public radio station, and that's very different from a commercial radio station. I'd say there was a great deal of hubbub and activity in the radio station in Uganda, whereas here the environment is somewhat calm and not as rushed or stressed. So I think that's interesting.
It allows you to really think about your stories, what you're going to pursue, to go deeper. Have longer interviews, longer stories.
Yes, and certainly more time. I guess I marinate more in my thought about what it is I want to do or record or say. Whereas when I worked at the commercial radio station, we were under a deadline and you had to crank it out regardless.
This has got to be something that is very nice, something you value.
Yes, I do, and I'm sorry to see this internship come to an end. I am in mourning right now.
Well, maybe you'll be back again.
Well, if you'll have me, Mr. Martino, I'll be very happy to come back and work just as hard.
You know we will. I want to go back a little further, and I want to talk about your experience growing up in Uganda.
What exactly is it that you'd like to know?
Whatever stands out to you, if you had to tell someone about what it was like to grow up in Uganda.
I led a very sheltered life. I heard no angry voices. I never heard people cursing or swearing. My parents were very much in love. My father, he is a lawyer, a broadcaster, an author, a politician, and a philanthropist. And my mother was a businesswoman, and a nutritionist. Oh, I forgot to mention that my father was also a business person. But we grew up in a very calm environment. We used to debate at the dinner table about minor things or major things, and I always wanted to have the last word. My mother and father instilled a very hard work ethic in me, and they expected me to exert myself, so they wouldn't let me get away with any excuses. I attended quite a number of private schools, co-ed, and I was quite athletic as a child.
Played sports?
Yes, I did. Rounders, basketball, cricket, soccer, I swam, volleyball, name it, I've done it.
Rounders is?
It's the equivalent of softball. Ah. It's the British equivalent of softball.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're pretty close to your parents.
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. Must have been hard to leave home then.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. It was so difficult. I used to call them on the phone and say, oh, get me out of here. I can't take it anymore. And they said, no, you have a goal. You have to complete your education and then you can come back. So I'd say that the first 3 years in the United States was a cultural shock. It was very difficult and the weather was harsh, you know, going to school in the Midwest, where it was about 4 below zero. It was awful.
And where was that?
In Tiffin, Ohio.
And the university is?
It was Heidelberg University in Tiffin, Ohio, in Seneca County. Where it was about 45 minutes from Toledo, 2 hours from Cleveland, and an hour from Columbus, the capital of Ohio.
So you went from the cold to the warmth of New Mexico State University.
Yes, that's true.
You mentioned a cultural shock. Tell me more about that, the key differences between the United States and Uganda that really hit you.
I noticed that people were rather self-absorbed here in the United States. It was an individualist culture. Whereas in Uganda, the people were more warm and hospitable. And it was a collective culture. We cared about each other. But in the United States, I noticed it was more about me, me, me. What is in it for me? Me, myself, and I. Mm. That's what I noticed. That selfishness. But then I've also met some very good people who don't exhibit those characteristics, whose hearts are solid and warm. Those people out in the Midwest, the people from Ohio, the people from Michigan, very giving, you know, and I like that.
Does this influence your thoughts at all on whether you, when you finish your education, want to stay in the U.S. or move back to Uganda?
Maybe I'd like to stay and work in the United States maybe for a year or so and then return to Uganda with the training and skills that I've acquired and test it out in the waters over there and see how strong my skills are.
All right. You mentioned that challenge that we hear so very often about this individualism in America and not many people not thinking about the broader society. And I'm wondering on the flip side, what you think are the best parts of being in America? What are the things that have stood out to you as positive?
I think the things that have stood out to me as positive in the United States, besides a couple of the very decent people that I've met, decent giving people, it's the education and the opportunities here. It's a gold mine out here. And if you really know how to tap into it and work hard, you can reap the benefits. This is the land of opportunity, and it's open to those who are willing to do their own push-ups, work themselves to the bone. You can get a lot. Mm. And that's what I like about this country. The opportunities, they're there in plenty.
Are there other challenges that come to mind for you, for someone who's trying to integrate into the American culture?
I think the challenges are trying to reject what I think might be inappropriate and trying to keep the good of my upbringing. So there are certain values that I'd like to hold close to my heart. And then there are certain values, American values, which I think won't, you know, work too well with me. It's trying to pick out the good from the bad and keeping that. And sometimes that is a challenge.
Any examples of that come to mind? Or you'd rather not say?
I wouldn't mind saying, actually. I love family. I'm very traditional. And with me, I wouldn't want my father to live in a nursing home. I'd want him to live with me, you know, no matter how difficult he might be. But with me, I want to keep him close to me. I don't want to, you know, put him into a nursing home. That's just one of the tiny values for me that I think I could incorporate into my life at this point. I want my father to live with me. I don't want him to live in a nursing home. I think that old people, you know, have many years of wisdom and they're valuable. Just because they've been turned out into the pastures doesn't mean that they're of no use. And this is a youth-crazed society that thinks that the minute you hit 35, that's it. There's nothing else for you out there. And I beg to disagree.
I've heard people from other countries say that one impression of Americans in general, not everyone, again, in general, is this notion of American exceptionalism, the belief that everything is best in America. Did you find this as you started to have experience of being in America, that this was a common idea that you found people had?
Yes, I think in regards to material things, they'll think that the best things are found here in America. But in terms of the quality of life, times of, you know, work-life balance, I can think you could find a better work-life balance in the African continent or in the European continent, where you work hard and you play hard and there are no extremes and there's enough time for family and extracurricular activities and hobbies.
So we can learn some things by looking to other countries.
Yes, if you went there and maybe took a vacation a week or two. It's just so how relaxed the lifestyle is. You go to work and you take a break and the work will always be there when you come back. It won't run away. Don't be so addicted to your BlackBerry.
If you could only see the expression on Rita's face right now. Rita, our immigration laws often make it difficult for non-citizens to stay in the country. Give me your thoughts about this and this overall situation. And you, I'm sure you've seen in your time here this kind of polarization on immigration and your thoughts on that.
Well, one thing that I would say as an immigrant is if you're aware that your visa is about to expire, make a decision 60 days before it expires as to whether you want to stay in the country or if you want to leave, and take the necessary steps to get in touch with an immigration lawyer and explore your options. Go onto the internet or read any literature about the immigration and find out what your options are and how you can navigate those waters.
Some argue this is one of the reasons we need immigration reform, is that those waters are very difficult to navigate, that it's very hard to stay in the country. There are many things, many hoops to jump through, so to speak. What would you say to the person listening about the need for immigration reform?
I'd say ask yourself, how did you come into this country? Did you come into the country illegally or legally? Because if you came into this country legally, your chances of maybe changing your immigration status are higher, provided you don't have a criminal record and provided you pay your taxes on time, and that is shown on, you know, on your W-2s or your W-4s. So I'd say that make sure that your immigration status stays current. If you want to change it, find out how you can get the necessary visas to stay in the country or return to your country within 60 days of your visa expiring, and then try to make a comeback into the country.
What do you make of President Obama's announcement that because Congress has not acted, he's provided a temporary way for some young undocumented immigrants to stay in the country?
I think that's a brilliant idea, because if some of these young children came into the United States with their parents, and apparently it's their parents that committed the sin of being illegal and snuck into the country, they're innocent. They have no control over it. If they go to school and they do well, you know, and they volunteer and give back to the community and they assimilate into this culture, you know, and are willing to serve and give back, I think that the doors of this world should be open to them. They've done no wrong.
Tell me your thoughts about this achievement by President Obama, becoming the first African-American president in the United States.
John Fitzgerald Kennedy once said during his term that 40 years from now, the landscape in the United States is changing and there'll be a black president. And I think that this is a huge feat. And I know that this is not the end of it. I think it's the beginning. More and more African Americans are seeing this and are beginning to follow suit. So I think this is something terrific.
When I was in Germany, in a journalism exchange program, many of the people that I spoke with there told me about the incredible effect that this had for them on their image of America as a better place as a result of this change that America had elected an African-American president. You being from another country as well, being from Uganda, I'd like your impression of this, your personal thoughts on this, especially since you're from the African continent.
I'd say I'm a little bit biased about, you know, being from the African continent, and I've seen so many African presidents, and some of them do a great job. We must remember that Obama's father was from Kenya. So when I see things of this nature happening, I see that America's landscape is changing for the better and giving people the opportunity to surpass themselves. And he's doing a great job. Mm. He's very charismatic, too.
Certainly is. In a larger sense, what do you make of politics here? I know that you have an interest in politics, and you've already mentioned in this conversation that your father is actually a politician.
Yes, my father's a politician. He's been a politician, and he commentates. He's a commentator on politics. He keeps a rather neutral ground when he's broadcasting and voices his opinions far more strongly at home in the privacy of his house. Politics is interesting. It's interesting to see how the behavior changes and what people think and say and what can be done if politics is played the right way and not the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Was it surprising at all, the polarization that we have in this country, in politics?
You mean in comparison with African politics?
Or just in general? I mean, things that stood out to you when you saw this very polarized political system that we seem to have right now.
I'll tell you something. I think that this political system in the United States is the best in the world. Mm. Some major decisions cannot be carried out unless Congress or the House of Representatives has a say in it and they vote. I think it's better that way than just having a dictator who just lays down the law with no concern for the people that he's leading.
Yeah, well, certainly we do have the ability to vote in this country. Some are very fearful, though, about the increasing influence of money in our political system, especially with the Supreme Court decision, Citizens United, which has allowed huge sums of money, sometimes from individuals, making headlines as an example recently, a casino magnate pumping $20 million into the campaign of Newt Gingrich. And now, with Gingrich's exit from politics, at least it seems, pumping $10 million into the campaign for Mitt Romney. What are your thoughts about that as someone coming into our country to see this enormous impact, sometimes of just an individual being able to give that kind of amount of money to a political campaign?
That doesn't surprise me because I've seen the same in Uganda.
Mm.
Whereby people support the candidate they're in favor of, you know, by giving them so much money. That doesn't surprise me in the least. Mm. I've seen this before. It's pretty common in African politics.
Do you think that it's something that, as some have suggested in the United States, Congress needs to take a closer look at in terms of trying to balance this enormous effect that an individual can have who's able to give that kind of amount of money to a political candidate or a cause?
It really depends, I think. It depends. I don't know if those political candidates have a budget of how much they're supposed to spend, and they're not supposed to go over budget.
Well, some have suggested there should be limits.
Limits
on contributions so that there isn't a lopsided power grab by the rich. What do you think?
I'm going to remain neutral on that for now. I think I'll remain neutral on that for now.
Not sure about that, huh?
I'm not sure. I've just decided to remain neutral.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You don't want to share your thoughts on it. Well, as we conclude, I want to take it back to you, and I want to have you tell me about your future and your hopes and dreams for your future.
I'm going to return to my first love, broadcasting. And I'm going to be on fire every day that I go into work. And I'm going to work myself to the bone. And I'm going to find passion and dance with my first lover again. That's what I plan to do. And I plan to also give back to this society as well, because I think it's very